This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
When the will was read, everybody figured she'd been crazy when she wrote it. And that included me. But I changed my mind after spending a night on an island with a pig, a cat, and an ape. Because in reality, they were people.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character as CBS presents The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. And now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's unusual story, Where There's a Will.
I had spent the whole day on a noisy job which had concerned itself with a lot of people who talked a lot and said nothing. When I finally locked up my office for the night, I was worn out. As I drove slowly along the street, I was glad to be heading for home and a little peace and quiet. At least that's what I thought. But when I pulled up for a full stop sign, only a half a block from my apartment, something happened which brought my little dream of peace and quiet to an end. A car door opposite me flew open and something mighty excited jumped in.
I'm being followed. Drive on, please.
The law?
No, please drive on.
Okay, lady, get a good grip on the upholstery. That ought to do it. Now, what's the... Say, you look a little pale and beautiful.
I'm always pale when my heart's in my mouth.
Well, then why don't you swallow once, take a deep breath, and tell me who was after you?
There isn't much to tell. It was a nasty little man, that's all I know. So thanks for making like Barney Oldfield, and good night.
Hey, hey, not so fast. It's impolite to hitch and run.
Look, mister, right now I'm up to my earrings in trouble, and that leaves very little time for small talk with strangers. Even nice ones.
Well, in that case, the name is Philip Marlowe, which takes care of the stranger part, and I'm a private detective, which makes trouble my business. Where do we go from there?
No place. $300,000 worth of hidden bonds, a screwy old lady, and a sculptor with a red beard are too much for any one-man police force, Mr. Marlowe. So again, good night.
Before I could say anything, she was out and gone. There was only the heady scent of taboo in the air. And the memory of a gorgeous profile with jet black hair and pale blue eyes. I sighed like a schoolboy and decided to put her under the heading of things that pass in the night. But I couldn't. Why, out of all the cars in Los Angeles, should she have picked on mine? Well, the next morning, as I was walking down the corridor to my office door, I was still seeing pale blue eyes. Maybe that's why I didn't notice the man who waited outside my door until I was almost on top of him. He was well-dressed and about 35. He looked like a man who had forgotten how to smile.
Marlowe.
Right.
I want to compliment you on your behavior last night, Mr. Marlowe. Barbara told me about it.
Oh? Come on in, Mr.
Shields. Edward Shields. Would you be interested in aiding three people in a search for more than $250,000 in negotiable bonds, 1% of which will be yours if the bonds are found?
Being a fairly fast man with figures, yes. Yes, I would.
Splendid.
I'd like a few details.
Well, Mr. Marlowe, my aunt, Bernice Mayhew Shaw, died, leaving her entire fortune to charity, with the exception of the bonds I mentioned. Those are to be divided equally among three of us, the sole heirs, if we find them within 24 hours.
That sounds like something you dream about after a midnight snack of pizza and pig's knuckles.
Perhaps, but you didn't know my aunt. Beside myself, the beneficiaries are Barbara Haynes, the girl you met last night. She was Aunt Bernice's personal secretary. And another nephew, Harlan Crane, who, at the moment, happens to be a sculptor.
Happens to be?
6 months ago, he was a sailor. Before that, a writer. Without even a rejection slip to his name. My cousin is irresponsible, impetuous, and completely self-indebted.
The will itself, Mr. Shields. What are the exact conditions?
At precisely noon today, the three of us are to meet with Luther Willard, my beloved aunt's lawyer, who will give us each a large sheet of tissue paper covered with specific markings. Individually, the sheets mean absolutely nothing. But combined, one over the other, the transparent sheets form a coherent map to the location of the bonds.
But why all the intrigue?
My dear departed aunt had a peculiar sense of humor. In addition to this, she was never particularly fond of any of us. She was sure that our individual shortcomings would make cooperation among us impossible, even for so short a period as 24 hours.
And the fact that a man followed Miss Haynes last night convinced you that there was something to that, huh?
Convinced me? No. He may have been nothing but a purse snatcher. Nevertheless, I do feel that to play safe a fourth party, a custodian of the map, so to speak, would be advisable.
That's fine. When do I go to work, Mr. Shields?
At noon, at the lawyer's office. However, I regret that first you must be approved by the third heir. I don't like to ask this, Mr. Marlowe, but would you mind very much calling on my cousin, Harlan, personally?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I think he might prove very interesting.
Yes. I am sure he will. As interesting as an ape in the zoo.
I felt like saying, look, Shields, I'm not as gullible as I look. But then I thought a client's a client, and I decided to play along. Harlan Crane, 6 foot, red-bearded giant, talked as he worked, wielding a 10-pound sculptor's mallet like it was an 18th-century quill.
I'll be frank with you, Marlowe. Money isn't everything to me and never has been. Over $100,000 will buy a lot of marble.
Half the state of Vermont, I'd say. But come to the point, Mr. Crane. Do I get your seal of approval?
Oh, I imagine you'll be all right. Anyone who can get by Shields, the all-American Scrooge, ought to do.
Thanks, a million.
I'm not being personal where you're concerned. It's just a matter of facing a fact bluntly. Edward Shields is conniving, avaricious, and dull. I heartily recommend him to nobody.
And the girl, Barbara, you feel the same way about her?
No, I don't. And the truth of the matter, Marlowe, is that I know very little about Barbara Haynes. But what I do know, I like very much.
Yeah, that I can understand.
Marlowe, do you realize that once you have the whole map in your possession, you're worth an awful lot of money?
Of course I do. The whole map, I have a market value of exactly $300,000.
That's right, fellow. $300,000, dead or alive.
I know it was small of me, but I didn't exactly see the joke. And things got less funny as time went on. Later, as me and my trio got off the elevator at the lawyer's office, old Luther Willard, Aunt Bernice's attorney, was waiting for us, so excited he could hardly talk.
I've been held up.
What?
Yes. A little man. He wanted the map.
A little man? Dark complexion?
Yes, yes. Had a scar on the side of his neck.
Are the maps all right?
Hmm? The maps? Oh, yes, yes, they're all right.
Now, wait a minute, everybody. Give him a chance. Mr. Willard, tell us exactly what happened.
This is Mr. Marlowe. We told you about him, Mr. Willard.
Of course, yes, yes. Come into my office. You see, I was putting some papers into my safe when this little man stepped up behind me and demanded the maps.
Were they in the safe?
No, thank heavens. Make yourselves comfortable.
The maps, Mr. Willard, where are they now?
Well, right here where they were all the time. Here under the blotter on my desk. Clever of me, wasn't it? Wax seals, still intact.
I'll take all three of them right now, Mr. Willard. That is, if there are no objections. All right, then I guess we can be on our way.
Hold on, Mr. Marlowe. There are still two things you people must know. First, in the event the bonds are not recovered within the 24 hours, I am instructed to open another sealed envelope, which I am happy to report is kept in my bank vault. That envelope contains a complete and simplified map and is to be turned over to a designated charity. And second, if any of you die before the allotted time is up, the bonds are to be divided among the surviving persons.
And if none of us survives, Mr. Willard...
Why, in that case, the bonds again go to charity. You see, Harlan, your aunt was a very generous woman.
After arranging to meet with the three heirs at Shields' place later that afternoon, I headed for the nice and public library, where I figured I'd be able to examine the maps in safety. By placing the three maps exactly one over the other, I saw that the bonds were hidden on the larger of two squares of land called Twin Islands, which were the personal property of the late Bernice Mayhew Shaw, and located in Indian Lake in the San Bernardino Mountains. As I left the library with the three maps in my pocket, It felt like a well-fed mallard on the opening day of hunting season. Then I knew I was being followed. As I slipped into a doorway and turned, I saw it was the nasty little man with the scar.
All right, you, we're through playing tag.
No, let me go.
Not yet, Shorty, not until you talk loud and clear.
No, no, don't hit me, please. Please hit me down, I'll tell you everything.
All right. If you're sure you can get it all straight the first time, there. Now, the whole story, beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, like you say, whole story. Okay. Starts like this!
Ooh!
By the time I figured out that it had been the sawed-off end of a broomstick that had slammed my stomach up against my backbone, the little man was out of sight. Another 5 minutes went by before I quit calling myself sucker and I started to think straight. Nearest public locker was in the Santa Fe Trailways bus depot in Cahuenga. I went up there and deposited 2/3 of the map for safekeeping until we were ready to leave for Indian Lake. And I found a telephone, and a half a dozen calls later, I knew that a caretaker named Jumbo was the sole inhabitant of Twin Islands, and my last call was to him. I wanted some kind of a welcoming committee ready for us. When I left the phone booth, it was only 1 o'clock. So I returned to my apartment where I figured I'd rest until 3, when we were all to meet at Shields' place. But that was my second mistake. Because the moment I closed my apartment door, I was positive I wasn't going to get much rest. I had an unannounced visitor.
Yeah, you look surprised, Mr. Marlowe.
I am. I didn't recognize you at first without your broomstick.
Yeah, I traded that in on this 22 target pistol here. It's more expensive, but it's better. Makes me as big as you are. Maybe bigger.
Yeah, but how much does it do for your personality?
Quite a bit. Gives me poise. And poise gives me manners. So in asking for that map in your pocket, I'll even say please. Come on, Marlowe, I won't say please twice.
No, I don't think you would. Here.
Thank you. Now, before I go, one more thing. The hall outside here is straight and narrow, right to the stairs, and that makes it fine for shooting. So after I step out, don't do anything rash. For a while.
So, loving life as I do, I didn't do anything rash for a while. In fact, I could have whipped up a nice 7-minute frosting before I moved at all. And I phoned the three heirs to get together at my apartment. When I finally had them all seated in front of me, I related the saga of the little man, including my premonition that one of the three present was signing his paychecks. Of course, I got nothing but Cupid doll innocence out of any of them. So after adding that we'd get underway just as soon as the missing 1/3 of the map was returned to me, I threw my trench coat over my arm and told them I was going for a walk. But before leaving them, I reminded them that whoever was behind the little man could fire him, because I would never have kept all three maps in one place anyway, unless all of the heirs were on hand to watch one another. And then I left. I hadn't walked more than a half a block up Franklin when I stopped at the sound of Barbara running after me.
Phil, I'm scared. Harlan and Shields are acting like a couple of wild men, calling each other every name under the sun.
What'd you expect? Chit-chat about the weather? Now quit acting like a bobby soxer within squealing distance of Sinatra and try a cigarette. It'll calm your...
What is it, Phil? Why are you smiling like that? What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong, Barbara, nothing. It's just that I found this in the pocket of my trench coat when I went for my cigarettes.
It's the map.
That's right. The missing third. It's back already. When that missing third part of the map turned up so fast, I figured the heirs had decided to play ball. But I made a mental note to keep my eyes on them anyway. At 3 o'clock, I went to Edward Shields' hillside house in Laurel Canyon for the scheduled meeting. Shields wasn't home yet, but Cousin Harlan was there, admiring the view. Barbara showed up a few minutes later in a convertible, and Shields arrived last by cab. It finally began to look as though we might actually start out all together.
Well, I see we all arrived, safe and sound.
Yeah, disappointed?
Only by your clumsy attempts at humor, Harlan.
Stop it, boys. Let's get started. Phil, have you looked at the map? Where are we going?
To Indian Lake. It's a 4-hour drive, so if you're all ready, I suggest we get started.
Very well.
I'll go up to the garage and get the car.
So Aunt Bernice hid the bonds in a roost at Twin Islands, eh? Well, well, well.
Nobody seemed surprised at the location Aunt Bernice had chosen to hide her bonds. In Holland, Barbara and I stood on the front porch watching Shields as he climbed the very steep driveway to his garage in the car. But Barbara got more of my attention than Shields. Ah, she made a mighty dreamy picture. And she leaned casually back against the rail of the porch. She wasn't aware that I was watching her. And I suddenly saw her go tense, her eyes filled with fear, and I quickly turned to follow her stare. Shields' car was going at a rapid clip down the steep driveway. I still couldn't figure out Barbara's concern, and then she started screaming.
The car's out of control.
The car was headed for the edge of a cliff.
His brakes are out.
He'll go over. Oh. The tree stopped him.
Shields, are you hurt?
No, I'm all right. The brakes, I tried to stop
him. You hadn't hit that tree.
You'd have gone over the edge.
Let's have a look at those brakes, Shields. Well, no wonder.
What is it?
Brake lines broken. Every drop of fluid drained out.
I might have been killed.
No might about it, Shields. We stood there for a while, all looking at one another, but nothing was said. Brake lines rarely snap accidentally. I remembered that Harlan had been at Shields' house early, and the car had been in the garage, and Barbara... Well, I had to admit that she actually had anticipated the car going out of control. Well, the 24 hours for finding the bonds were slipping by, and I knew we had to get to Indian Lake. We held a short powwow without passing the peace pipe, and we decided to take Barbara's car. We picked up the rest of the map, which I'd checked at the bus station, and we shoved off. After a four-hour drive that was about as relaxing as the thought of an overdue time bomb in a day nursery, we finally pulled up to the shores of Indian Lake. Jumbo, the caretaker, was waiting at the dock. He knew how to handle a boat, and a few minutes later, we could see Twin Islands. We headed for the smaller of the two, where I could make out a rambling lodge. The other island, a quarter of a mile away, seemed deserted. Shields was the first one ashore.
Here, Barbara, let me help you.
Run along, boy. I'll help Barbara.
Thanks, Harlan. Well, Marlo, what now?
Well, first we go up to the house. Oh, Jumbo, you got everything ready for us? Hey, Jumbo.
Huh? Sure. Everything's ready, Mr. Marlo. It's like you said, I opened four of the upstairs rooms.
Open the rooms? We're not going to sleep out here, are we?
I'm going to try.
But this isn't a vacation. We're here to find the bonds and get out. You realize it's almost 9 already?
That leaves us just 15 hours, Marlowe.
Yeah, I know. I got a good watch and I count to 24, and I'm also giving orders to
you
three.
Don't get high-handed, Marlowe. You're an employee of ours, and that's all. Let's get the map together and start looking for those bonds right now.
Take it easy, big man. The bonds are hidden on the other island. The map is as tangled as a second-hand spider web. We wouldn't get anything at all down in the dark.
That's your opinion.
Look, you people hired me to help you find those bonds. If I have to get nasty to make you take orders, I can do that too. Now let's play like we're smart and go up to the lodge and relax.
All right, Marlowe. But remember, we'd better have those bonds by tomorrow, or someone else will be nasty. Very nasty. And I mean me.
What? You too? Getting the three heirs settled down at dinner table was quite a chore. And when I was sure they'd keep an eye on each other, I slipped outside. I hid one third of the map in a drain pipe. Then I went upstairs to my room and I hid another third in the window shade. Now the maps were settled and I began to think about other things like the accident to Shields' car. And there were too many accidents and coincidences to suit me. So I decided to drop in on Cousin Holland's room to see what I could see. After 15 fruitless minutes, I was about to leave when something in the wastebasket caught my eye. The corner of a half-hidden handkerchief monogrammed HC. I had just picked it up when I saw Jumbo standing in the open door.
That handkerchief there in your hand, that blood on it?
No. No, it looks more like brake fluid. And in this case, it's practically the same thing, huh? I think we'll leave it right here in the wastebasket, Jumbo. Oh, did you want something?
Just wanted to say I'll be in my own place out back if you want me.
Okay. You know where Mr. Shields is?
He's out in the veranda.
Alone?
Yeah.
Thanks, Jumbo. If I need anything, I'll call you. Good night. Shields.
Oh, it's you, Marlowe. What's wrong?
You sound like a man expecting trouble.
I was nearly killed in my car this afternoon, and I don't think that was the end of it.
Yeah, and don't stand too close to high windows.
Thank you. It's comforting to know that I am not alone in my suspicions.
Maybe, how are you betting? On the beauty or the beast?
Don't be absurd. I hope someday to marry Barbara.
Yeah? Well, a guy might be beating your time right now with a sculptor's mallet.
You may be naive, Mr. Marlowe, but Barbara isn't. I saw them just a moment ago walking down to the boathouse. Harlan's galloping after her like a half-baked idiot, as usual. But if Miss Haynes prefers me, what can he do about it?
There was an answer for that, but it seemed a little obvious under the circumstances. Well, a few minutes later, Shields went inside, and I made a beeline for the boathouse to water down a certain hot-headed sculptor named Harlan. When I got within earshot, I knew I'd be as welcome as whooping cough at a glassblower's convention. So I stopped and listened.
Barbara, darling, I'm falling in love with you. You know that, don't you? Let me hold you close.
Harlan, Oh, Harlan.
This is real, Barbara. For the first time in my life, I'm truly in love. I want to do things for you, make you happy.
Please wait. I'm not completely free. There are still ties with Edward, you know.
Shields. That fat, stingy Babbitt. He's no man for you. Why, if he so much as touches you from now on... Wait a minute, Barbara. Marlowe, you cheap snooping eavesdropper.
Eavesdropping's a minor vice compared to some of the shenanigans going on around here.
Just what do you mean by that?
A word to the wise is sufficient. You, I'll give a few more. Now, somebody's trying to cut our little triangle down to two sides before noon tomorrow. What I've seen so far, I don't like, so I'm warning everybody.
Just what are you accusing me of? Why,
Harlan, stop it. Don't be a fool. Will you cavemen control yourselves until those bonds are found? Come on, Harlan, let's go in. Good night, Marlowe. Don't get your head caught in any transoms.
Deciding sleep wouldn't be very healthy for a man in my position, I decided to sit up that night. It was about 2 o'clock when I looked out the window and saw something mighty interesting. A light was moving on the other island opposite us. I got hold of John Moore and we went over there as fast as we could.
We're beach. That light's dead ahead, Mr. Marlowe. Looks to me like it's up in the picnic shelter.
Yeah, I'll see you later, Jumbo.
Who's there?
Guess who?
Oh, Marlowe. I didn't hear you come up. Wind's too strong, I guess. I'm glad to see you. Spooky here all alone.
Oh, sure, sure. What's the idea? Decide to do a little freelance prospecting?
Yeah, that's right. Bernice Mayhew loved this spot. And I had a hunch she hid the bonds here in the base of this table. Oh, I guess I was wrong. Oh, come on, Marlowe, limber up. You can't blame me for trying.
Listen, beautiful, don't flap your eyelashes at me. I can't see anything but double crosses right now. All right, if you've had your fun, let's go back to the lodge,
Don't be that way, Phil. Phil, the sun will be coming up in 2 or 3 hours. Why not wait for it here with me?
Barbara, baby, don't burn up too many calories with that routine. Because I only keep 1/3 of the map on me.
You think you're so smart.
Bright ideas hatching that cute little brain of yours, too. Now let's... Comes the gun with a pearl handle, no less.
Stay away from me, Marlowe. Over there.
Hey, what's going on here, anyway?
Jumbo!
Look out, Jumbo! Jumbo stepped into the light and Barbara turned. I made a swipe at a gun hand that knocked pistol, purse, and lamp all over the picnic shelter. I found the gun and gave it to Jumbo. Then I started to pick up an assortment of knickknacks that had spilled out of a purse. But I never finished, because one of the items made my eyes pop. It was the monogrammed handkerchief covered with brake fluid that I'd found in Harlan's room. It all made sense now. It tied up everything that I'd suspected right along. Only two of my trio had planned to split up the $300,000 worth of bonds from the first. As I ran for the motor launch, I yelled at Jumbo to bring Barbara over in the rowboat. All the way back, I had the panicky feeling that I was probably too late. But when I sneaked in the front door of the lodge, there were still two voices, and they came from the open kitchen door. With my hand on my gun, I edged along the wall and peeked in.
Shields, you're a fool.
Perhaps. But I'm going to kill you and have a perfect case of self-defense.
What are you talking about?
You're hopelessly framed, Cousin Harlan. I ruined the brakes on my own car. I planted your handkerchief, stained with brake fluid, in your room. Marlowe found it. He's convinced that you tried to kill me. He's also convinced that he was brought into this whole thing by coincidence.
He doesn't know that he was deliberately involved in our search for the bonds, just so he'd make a reputable witness.
You're out of your mind.
Not at all. I'm going to kill you and say it was self-defense. Marlowe will testify that you tried to kill me before.
What Marlowe's going to do is blow your head off if you don't drop that gun, Shields.
Marlowe?
Yeah, Marlowe. Who knows, he wasn't brought into this thing by coincidence, but has stuck around to see the fireworks and almost saw them just now.
Bill, what's happened?
Barbara, couldn't you hold Marlowe on the other island? You
shut up, Shields! Barbara's little mistake was that she should have gotten rid of Holland's handkerchief after she took it out of his room so he wouldn't see it.
Barbara, I don't understand. You planned all this with Shields against me?
Well, I did in the beginning, Harland, but I changed my mind when I fell in love with you. I let Marlowe find the handkerchief in my purse. I wanted him to stop, Edward. Oh, darling, don't you
see...
Come
on, Miss Bankhead, cut the dramatics. The show's over. Let's have it straight, huh?
All right. We might as well if we're going to find those bonds before it's too late. Edward and I did plan it. We even hired the little man who tried to get the maps from you.
And when that didn't work, you planned to get rid of Holland and split the 300 grand.
So we failed. So what? We're right back where we started. 100,000 apiece. Now let's go find those bonds.
Not so fast, beautiful. What happened to Holland just now was a little more serious than a hot foot. It was attempted murder. He can slap you two in the jug this minute if he wants to. But I'll leave it up to him. Okay, Holland, what do you say? It's your move.
No. I've got a better idea. Marlowe, one third of that map is mine. Give it to me.
Okay. There it is.
Harlan, what are you going to do?
Harlan, no. Don't burn it.
There. Now we all lose. Now none of us will get the bonds. That's probably how Aunt Bernice wanted it anyway.
It was almost noon. I was standing on the veranda of the lodge, and a scrawny old crow was perched up on the roof. I saw Barbara and Shields quietly pull away in a boat with Jumbo. And I saw Holland lumbering off to the far end of the island to sulk. And as I watched the three of them, I couldn't help thinking. A pig in a pinstriped suit, an ape with a red beard, and an alley cat in nylon. Yeah. Keep laughing, Aunt Bernice. You were right. Greed, treachery, and rashness don't mix, even for 24 hours. And the 1% of the bonds I was to get? Well, that's my contribution to charity. Who knows? Maybe I can take it off my income tax.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, stars Gerald Moore and is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Featured in tonight's story were Mary Shipp, Parley Bear, Don Diamond, Ted Von Eltz, and Wilms Herbert. The special music was conceived and conducted by Richard Orant. Be sure to be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
When I got the crisp $50 bill in advance, I figured my client had a heart of gold. But after I was beat up, double-crossed, and shot at, I realized just how hard a heart of gold could be.
Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett, John Dixon Carr, three great names in the world of mystery and thrills. One down, two to go today on CBS. Now that you've heard Raymond Chandler's Philip Marlowe in action, CBS invites you to hear Dashiell Hammett's Sam Spade in action tonight, followed by John Dixon Carr's personally written radio series, Cabin B-13. Chandler, Hammett, Carr, today and every Sunday, over most of these CBS stations. It's a mystery if you miss them. Roy Rowan speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
Got an old corpse kicking around you want identified? Know of any good murders you want solved? We've got just the girl for you. Her name is Candy Matson. Mighty cute, too. She fills out a size 12 suit to just the right proportions. Soft blonde hair, two sparkling blue eyes, and all in all, she looks as though she might have stepped right off a Varga calendar. And what's more, she's a private eye. You scoff? You ridicule? I'll let you see for yourselves. Listen, she's talking on the phone right now.
Hello, Candy Matson.
Hello, Miss Matson. I'm afraid you don't know me.
That makes it even. You don't know me. Let's go from there.
I've read about you in the papers, Miss Matson. You handle confidential cases.
That's right. However, there's a little matter of a fee involved.
Yes, yes, I know. I can pay.
That's item number one. Now to item number two. What's the confidential case?
I can't possibly tell you on the phone, Miss Matson. I said it was confidential.
Okay. Where do you want to talk?
I am the proprietor of a restaurant, the Charlemagne in North Beach.
Oh, yeah. I ate there once.
Oh, that's nice.
No, it wasn't. I didn't like the food.
Oh.
However, I'll overlook it. Do you want to talk in about an hour?
That will be fine, Miss Matson.
Good. And your name would be...
Martinello. Carlo Martinello.
Okay, Mr. Martinello. And have some ink in your pen. It costs money just to talk. I probably sounded rough and commercial, but you have to be in this racket. Most people look on a private eye as a musician. They invite you to a party and expect you to bring your harp for free. But I learned the hard way a long time ago. So now they pay in advance and take their chances later. That's the way it was with this Martinello. I was at home in my penthouse on Telegraph Hill out on the porch taking a sunbath when the phone rings and it's this Carlo character. That part was all right because I can always use new customers. But what made me mad was the fact that I had to stop listening to the 49ers belt the bejabers out of the Cleveland Browns at Kezar Stadium. But I followed through and uncovered a couple of very done-in bodies along the way. Do you like the grotesque in your whodunits? Then follow me and we'll tiptoe lightly through the Tibbets, the Ponds, and the Baccalonies, because part of the story unfolds at the Opera House. Reluctantly, I dressed into something Charlemagne-ish, turned off the 49ers Cleveland game, and went down to talk to Martinello. His place was typical. Located on Paul Street, a garish neon sign, and as you walked in, the place was air-conditioned by eau de garlic.
Yes, miss. You wish a table?
I wish a table, yes. With the right party, I'm looking for the owner.
I am the owner.
I am Candy Matson.
Oh, Miss Matson. Walk this way, please.
If I could walk that way, I'd revive vaudeville.
Pardon?
Where is your office?
Right over here. Allow me. After you, signorina.
Thank you, signor.
Here, sit down, please.
Thanks. Now, Martinello, what's on your mind?
Always, all my life, I have run a very nice, respectable place.
Mm-hmm.
Until this morning.
What's with this morning?
I go down to the basement. My icebox is down there. That is where I keep all my meat.
So, you wanted some ground round?
Oh, no, no. Perhaps I'd better show you. Please, you will come with me.
Martinello led the way out of his office and down a flight of stairs. A cold blast hit my face. A musty aroma smothered my nostrils, and if I had had a phobia about darkness, I'd have ducked out then. But I followed the guy, and we ended up in front of a refrigerator about the size of an Inquisition chamber. He opened the door, and it was the usual restaurant icebox, choice legs of lamb hanging from hooks, potential fillets and thick New York cuts. The box was cold, and I started to shiver. Not from the refrigeration, though, because over in the corner was a man. He looked like something out of a long-lost Arctic expedition. He had a long, flowing mustache, every bristle of which was coated with ice. He was quite frozen and quite dead. I slammed the door shut and reeled out. The sight had staggered my thought processes. Martinello reached over by a salami slicing table and turned on a Mazda, a weak affair that cast dim shadows about the damp basement. Is that your little surprise?
Yes, Mr. Matson. That is what I was greeted with this morning.
Have you notified the police?
Oh, no, no, no.
Why not?
As I told you, I have run a very respectable place. And, too, that is why I am hiring you.
You can get in trouble, you know.
Yes, yes, that is why you must help me. Please, please, Miss Matson, say you will help me. I will pay you anything you say.
I stick my neck out in the strangest places. Now it's a refrigerator. Okay, Martinello, $2,000.
What?
Make up your mind. Either I freeze your assets or the police find your frozen friend.
Yes. All right. Come. I give you the money now.
Now we're getting somewhere.
What about him?
Oh, he'll keep. He's on ice. Well, this was one for the books. Refrigeration the ugly way. I had to ask a few questions if I was to get anywhere, such as like, do you know the guy?
No.
Had you ever seen him before?
No.
Who was the last one to close the icebox last night?
I was.
Does it lock from the inside?
Unfortunately, yes.
I was getting places like Wiley was with Hauser. It was inevitable. I had to take my courage in my hand and go down and look at that thing again. There it was, a male Mona Lisa etched in ice. This time I looked closer, I had to. And as I did, I realized I wasn't going to get any identification because this guy was a study in crimson. Underneath all that coating of ice, he was dressed in a devil's costume. I slammed the door once again and went upstairs. There I gave Martinello strict orders not to do a thing. Usually in cases like this, you have to wait for a break. They come along like a forcing hand in poker. So I went home to do some thinking. As I arrived, there was an old friend of mine, Rembrandt Watson.
Hello, Dove. I'd almost given up.
Rembrandt, how did you get in?
Your door was open, dear. I took the liberty of coming in.
Oh, sure, that's okay.
How are things, Candy?
All right, I guess. I'm kind of bushed, though. I feel about as devaluated as a British pound.
You look wonderful, Dove. What's wrong?
I've got a deal, but I don't know where to start.
Anything I can help you with?
No, thanks, Rembrandt. If I told you about it, you wouldn't believe it.
I've never doubted you in the past, dear.
I know. Well, I was just called in by a minestrone merchant in North Beach. The guy is stuck with a corpse.
That's about par for the course.
The deceased had been sealed in the icebox overnight. I've never seen one like that before.
That's the way it is, dear. Many are called, but few are frozen.
Oh, get out of here.
But, Dove, I just got here.
I know, but I've got to change and get down to see Mallard.
I'll wait for you, Candy. I haven't seen the gumshoe since before me vacation.
All right. I'll be with you in a few moments. I did a fast change, and Rembrandt and I climbed into my car, and we dropped off Telegraph Hill on Don Carney Street. The Hall of Justice, where Mallard hangs his star, is only a few blocks away, so we made it in about 5 minutes. Inspector Ray Mallard, Homicide, San Francisco Police. A lovable, shaggy dog type of character. Very keen with the crime, but dumb with the dame. Me, for instance. If I want him to say yes, he says no, and vice versa.
Well, my ever-loving Candy, what's new in the private eye business?
Very little. How's the legitimate flatfoot racket?
Oh, we're holding our arches up. Well, and Rembrandt. I haven't seen you since Pup was a Hector. Please, Inspector, you're meting your mixer paws.
Who writes this dialogue?
I'm pretty weak, I know. What's on your mind, Candy?
A character named Carlo Martinello. Have you got anything on him? What's so funny, Mallard?
Nothing, except I eat lunch there about every day of the week.
Well, answer my question.
Well, there's nothing on Martinello. Arrested a couple of times during Prohibition. He was dabbling in grappa a lot under the table. Have you's got a case against the guy, Detective Matson?
Oh, cut it out.
No, seriously. Why do you want to check on the guy, Candy?
No reason, just thought I'd ask.
Well, Martinello's okay. Just trying to make a living. Only thing I don't like, he loves to sing to his customers.
That'd be enough to bankrupt him right there.
Anything else I can do?
No, that takes care of everything.
I tell you what, I'm through in about an hour. I'll take you up to Martinello's for dinner. You can see for yourself.
No, that's all right.
Okay, Candy. Give.
Why, Mallard, dear, what on earth do you mean?
You know something about something. I want in.
Mallard, and I want you to believe this. I mean it sincerely. If I knew something, you'd be the last to know about it.
He's got something there. Come, love, leave us a while.
I hate to do things like that to Mallard. He's been of great help to me in the past. More than once, he's saved my life. But on a deal like this, you have to play it close. After all, a girl has to make a living. For the first time in a long time, I was completely baffled as to where to start. Something had to be done about that cadaver in the icebox, but what? While I was beetling my eyebrows, Rembrandt invited me up to his place for tea. He lives on California Street, just down away from Old St. Mary's, and only a bail bond broker's reach from the Hall of Justice. So I accepted.
Do forgive the looks of the place, Candy, dear. I had a meeting my philatelist group last night.
Philatelists?
The stamp collectors, dear.
Oh, I know what they are, but I didn't think they could make such a mess.
You don't know philatelists. Sit down, though. Make yourself comfortable. I shan't be a moment.
That's all right.
And Candy, dear, why the wrinkles?
I've got cause for wrinkles. This chap in the icebox, Rembrandt, there's something I didn't tell you. He was dressed in a devil's costume.
There, there, dear. Your tea will ready in just a minute. You'll feel better.
I know it sounds crazy, but it's true.
What are you going to do, Candy?
I don't know. I can't leave him in that refrigerator forever.
We'll get him out, dear. I hate to think of a corpse catching pneumonia. Oh, excuse me, Candy. Help yourself to the tea.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do? Rembrandt Watson Enterprises.
Quiet, dove.
Who? Oh, hello, Templeton. How are all your steamships? Oh, that's good. What? Could I use do what? To the opera? Of course I could. Righto, I'll pick them up at your office. Thank you, Templeton. Goodbye. Candy, dear, do you like the opera?
I can take it or leave it. Why?
It suddenly develops that I have two tickets tomorrow night for Tales of Hoffman.
Oh, Rembrandt, I don't think I
come,
can.
Come, Candy. It'll do you good. You've been working too hard. You need a little relaxation.
Tales of Hoffman, hmm? Okay. Who's the pal who gave them to you?
An old friend of mine, Templeton Woodruff. He runs a steamship to Java and other places Ezio Pinza sings about.
I finished the tea and left. Right then, the only opera I could think of was the one going on in an icebox at Martinello's. I've always tried to play straight with Ray Mallard, so I decided to tell Martinello my plan.
Miss Matson, I don't think it's such a good idea.
Good evening, Carlo. I want to talk to you.
That's what I mean. There's a gentleman here who...
Oh, you've got a gentleman. That's fine. Three more and you've got a crowd. What I want to talk to you about is this.
You don't understand. The gentleman I'm talking about is from the police.
The police?
Yeah. Hello, Candy.
Mallard.
How about some scallopini?
Well, up jumps it. Hello, Mallard, dear.
I had an idea you'd like dinner here tonight. Do you know my boy, Carlo?
Yes, yes, we've met.
How do you do? How do you do? The signorina wish something to eat?
No. No, thanks. I want to talk to you, though, Mallard.
Sure. Come on into my booth. We'll share some salami.
No, no, thanks. I want to see you downstairs.
I don't think the food's as good down there.
I agree, but it isn't the food. I'm talking about murder. Once again, I headed down into the catacombs of the Charlemagne. This time, the act was a double. Mallard was right behind me. Then I looked around. We were a trio. Martinello was right behind Mallard. This is it.
This is what?
This is an icebox. Inside, you'll find a body dressed in a devil's costume.
Okay, Carlo, let's humor the lady. Open the thing, will you?
Yes. I'll open it.
Lovely view of the beef.
It's gone. The body's gone. Okay, Martinello, start talking and make some sense while you're doing it.
Please, Miss Matson, I don't know anything. I haven't been down here all day.
Get rid of those arched eyebrows, Martinello. You know something. What is it?
Wait a minute, Candy. I'll do the questioning. In the first place, Carlo, was there or was there not a body in here?
Sure there was. He can't deny it. Here's a check for $2,000 signed by Martinello himself.
Well, Carlo?
Yes. There was a body, all right.
Who was it? Friend of yours?
No, Inspector. I never saw him before.
Why did you call Miss Matson? Why didn't you come to see me about it?
Well, you know, Inspector, the police...
Just because you were once arrested for bootlegging, Carlo, is no reason to be afraid of the police. Well, I'll put a couple of my men on the job and see what we can turn up.
What? Is that all you're going to do, Mallard?
No. Right now, I'm going back upstairs and have some of Carlo's scallopini.
Mallard, are you out of your head?
Look, Candy, in order to have a murder case, you've got to have a body. Obviously, we're fresh out. And until your pal with the devil's costume turns up, I intend to live my typical everyday life. Don't forget the mushrooms, Carlo.
There are times when I get so mad at Mallard I want to scream. I didn't, though. I only scrammed. I hung on to the 2,000, however. I felt I deserved it just for getting my curiosity aroused, and it was aroused plenty. Corpses don't get up and walk out of iceboxes by themselves. But after all, Mallard had a point. There was nothing to be done without a body. So I went home and waded into a stack of dirty dishes that had been piling up. Then I fixed dinner and started a new stack of dirty dishes. Got a book and ducked into bed. In the morning, I had an idea. After breakfast, I went down to the corner of Broadway and Columbus. That's where North Beach does a neat blend with Chinatown. On the corner was a Joe who sold newspapers. I'd known him for some time, and he seemed to like me. Hiya, Butch.
Well, hello there, lady. How are you?
Good. Can't complain. Who won the football game yesterday?
Yeah, funny thing. I got all the news right inside here for 7 cents.
I get your point. Give me a chronicle, will you?
Sure. Here.
Thanks. Who do you like in the feature at Bay Meadows?
A goat named Candy.
What did you say?
There's a pig named Candy running in the seventh. Take it or leave it.
What a tip.
I don't get it. Well, what's really on your mind, lady?
Here's a 20. You can play it on Candy all for yourself.
Well.
Do you know a gent named Martinello Butch? Yeah. He owns the Charlemagne down the block.
Sure. What about him?
That's what I'm asking you. What about him?
Oh, he's all right. A little screwy, but he keeps his nose clean.
Is that all?
Yeah. Should there be more?
I don't know. Thanks, Butch. I hope Candy pays off. I was getting nowhere, that was for sure, and the rest of the day went the same way. Dead ends, blind alleys. I checked as many loose ends as I possibly could, but I was still stuck in a quandary. But the crusher claimed late in the afternoon when I got a copy of the late paper and read where Candy came in at Bay Meadows and paid $32.20. And I hadn't had sense enough to get aboard. When I got home, the phone was ringing. Hello, Candy Matson.
Oh, you're Candy Matson. I should play a fanfare.
Oh, hello, Rembrandt, dear. How are you?
Like an October morning. Every single one of the pores is breathing great, huge gulps of air.
What?
I just had a facial, Dove. Most invigorating.
What on earth for? I loved your old pores just the way they were.
Candy, you've forgotten.
I have? Forgotten what, Rembrandt?
We're going to the opera tonight.
Oh, Ducky, I'm sorry. I had forgotten. I'm afraid I'll have to renege.
Now, Candy, you promised, and I don't care what you're involved in. It'll do you good.
But, Rembrandt, I'm working on it. Perhaps you're right. Okay, I'll get ready.
Wonderful, dear. Pick me up about 7:45, will you?
Pick you up 7:45? Yeah.
Oh, and another thing, Lamb. We may have to do some entertaining afterward. Do bring some cash, will you?
Mm-hmm.
That's the girl.
That Rembrandt, always stony broke. I guess photography isn't what it's cracked up to be. I didn't mind, though. He's been a friend to me on more than one occasion. Well, if I was going to the opera, I had to start thinking in operatic terms. I fished around in the closet and came up with something that would have done any woman's heart good. One of those strapless affairs that you can't stop breathing in for one moment, otherwise the opera is no longer the main attraction. I powdered, perfumed, pouted, and rouged, and took off after Rembrandt. But just as I started to leave... Just a moment.
Well, get a load of the Duchess.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be Halloween for another couple of weeks yet.
Oh, very funny. Come on in, Mallard.
What are you decked out for, Candy?
Something you wouldn't understand. I'm going to the opera.
Oh, I love the opera. Any horse opera with Tex Acuff in it.
That's what I thought. What's on your mind, Mallard? I've got to pick up Rembrandt in 10 minutes.
Well, I was just driving by, so I thought I'd stop and tell you the news.
News? About what?
We found El Diablo.
The guy in the icebox?
Yeah. Martinello identified him. He was floating in the water off Aquatic Park.
Any lead on him?
The best. He was Salavini, the second baritone with the opera company. That's all, Candy. I hope you enjoy the performance tonight.
A baritone with the opera company. Well, that explained the costume, but it didn't explain a lot of other things. I walked down the stairs with Mallard. He got in his squad car, flicked on the flashing red light, and with a burst of his siren, rolled down the street. I'd have to speak to Mallard about that. All the neighbors had their heads out of their windows as I climbed into my car and followed. What an exit. I picked up Rembrandt and we drove up to the Civic Center. I found a place to park. A minor miracle. The last time I went to the opera, I had to drive almost to Palo Alto and come back by train. Rembrandt's friend must have been very influential. We had seats in the Diamond Horseshoe. They were presenting Tales of Hoffman, and a friend of mine, Dorothy Warrenschild, was singing the role of Antonia. It was a fine performance, and after the last curtain, I took Rembrandt, and we went backstage to see Dorothy. This is her dressing room, Rembrandt.
Yes?
Hello, Dorothy. This is Candy Matson. I have a friend with me.
Oh, do come in, please, Candy. Candy, how are you?
Couldn't be better. Dorothy, may I present Mr. Watson? Rembrandt, this is Miss Warrenschild.
Delighted. You're in magnificent voice tonight, dear.
Thank you. Sit down, won't you? I've only a moment. We're rehearsing some of the scenes in Faust tonight.
Rehearsing after a full evening's performance?
It has to be done, Candy. Our baritone disappeared. We've had to replace him with a new man.
Yes, I know. By the way, Dorothy, I heard you on your Standard Hour broadcast a few weeks ago. It was a wonderful performance.
I'm glad you liked it, Candy. I always look forward to those.
What are your plans, Dorothy?
Well, the season closes here, and then we open in Los Angeles.
Oh, yes, of course.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Come in.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had guests.
That's all right. Oh, Candy, I'd like to introduce Rolf Herberts. This is Miss Matson and Mr. Watson.
Nice to meet you.
Mr. Herbert is our new baritone.
Oh, yes.
That's why we're rehearsing tonight.
I won't take any more of your time, Dorothy. I just thought we'd save a few moments of rehearsal if I told you that I don't move in that last scene. I sing upstage. That will leave you free to take as much stage as you like.
Fine, Rolf. That will save time. Thanks.
Oh, not at all. Glad to have met you, Miss Matson. Mr. Watson.
Nice to have met you, sir.
See you on stage, Dorothy.
Yes, Rolf. Rolf has a wonderful voice, and he's a good actor, too. You know, I think he'll be even better than Salavini.
I've seen him before.
Oh, yes, he's been in pictures and on the concert stage, and in opera, too. But he's never really had a good break. This might be it. Uh-oh, that's it, Candy. I'm sorry, but I'll have to leave.
Certainly, Dorothy.
Say, why don't you stand in the wings? You can watch the rehearsal if you'd like.
Oh, I'd love it.
Come on, then. Follow me.
All right, to places, everyone. Places.
This is all right, Candy. You can stay right here.
Thanks, Dorothy.
Glad to have met you, Mr. Watson.
Also, as we used to say in the theater, go out there and kill them.
See you later.
Where is Miss Warrenschild? There you are. Herbert, where's Herbert?
I saw him just a moment ago in the dressing room.
Well, it's late. We've got to keep moving. Please, somebody find Herbert. Ah!
From way up in the heights of the stage, the opera house was pierced with a blood-curdling scream. That was no ordinary scream. It was the scream of death. You wait here, Rembrandt. Keep your eyes open. I'm going up to have a look. That scream wasn't in the score of Faust. I punched the button for the backstage elevator. It's a good thing they work fast and are speedy. Once inside, I pressed the button for the fourth gallery. I got out. This was the top of the opera house. The place was loaded with old sets, props, papier-mâché alligators, gold goblets. Then, over on the other side of the catwalk, I saw it. The body of a man all crumpled and distorted. I hit the catwalk and ran over. It was 100 feet above the stage, and as I looked down, I could see a score of strained faces looking up through the darkness. I got on the other side and bent over the body. It was that of Rolf Herbert.
Candy, down here. I think your man just ducked down underneath the stage.
Again, I did a Mel Patton. The elevator shot me down to the stage level, and there was Rembrandt, wild-eyed.
He came down the elevator on the other side, Candy. Then he cut across the stage and down those steps.
Come on, Rembrandt, follow me. I may need help. We ran down the steps and into the bowels of the stage. It looked like a nightmare, a myriad of cross beams of steel for the rising stages. We cleared those and went around by the chorus dressing rooms. There was only one out. I remembered it. A door over in the corner, very seldom used, but it was open. It led into a long tunnel with giant steam pipes running overhead and to the right. This went underground over to the veterans' building. Down by your feet, there's a stream of water flowing in a trough. It's the old Hayes Valley Creek. Our killer decidedly knew his opera house. As we entered the tunnel, I could see him up ahead running like crazy, so we took off after him. We made the other side, and it breaks into a big engine room. As we came into the opening, I looked around. The engineer was lying on the floor out like a light, blood spurting from his scalp. Then I glanced up. There was another door. This led into the veterans' building itself and an avenue of escape onto Van Ness. I ran up. Then as we got into the long corridor, I saw Martinello breaking for the door. Stop! Stop, Martinello!
Stop! You think I am a fool?
I do if you don't stop.
Try and get me.
Okay, pal. You asked for it. It was the first time I had ever shot a man. It didn't feel good. But he lived. And later, the doctors of law gave him a little pill. The cyanide kind they dropped inside the gas chamber at San Quentin. Martinello paid his debt. Details? Sure, I'll fill him in now. Martinello loved to sing. Ray Mallard had told me that. For years, Carlo had been hanging around the opera house, hoping to step into a role. This season, a director had jokingly told him that if he ran out of baritones, he'd let Carlo take over. Carlo took him seriously. He lured Salavini down to his restaurant on a fake emergency call, costume and all, and did him in. But then he became frightened. That's when he called me. It was worth $2,000 to have me hush things up. But I don't operate like that. He had a hunch I was going to tip off Mallard. That's when he removed the body from the icebox and dumped him into the bay. Carlo had also been at the performance of Tales of Hoffman. That's when he learned that they'd rustled up Rolf Herbert to sing in place of Salavini. By this time, Martinello was obsessed with the idea of singing in the opera house and wouldn't stop at anything. Right after Herbert left Warren Schold's dressing room, he managed to get Herbert into the elevator and up to the fourth gallery behind the stage. That scream was produced by a 6-inch stiletto through Herbert's heart from the hands of Martinello. And that's when our chase began. I hope I never see that tunnel under the opera house again. That Mallard and his sentiments. It was he who gave me that gun just a week before, for my birthday. He said I needed protection. Well, darn it, I do. But I can't get Mallard to believe me. Instead, he just gives me guns.
Listen again at this same time next week. For excitement and adventure, just dial...
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Heard tonight were Harry Bechtel as Rolf Herbert, Jerry Walter as Carlo Martinello. Henry Leff plays the role of Inspector Mallard and Jack Thomas as Rembrandt. Dorothy Warren Schold, star of the Standard Hour and the San Francisco Opera Company, was heard as herself. The program stars Natalie Masters as Candy and is written and produced by Monty Masters. With the exception of Miss Warren Schold, any resemblance to actual people in tonight's play is purely coincidental. Candy Matson comes to you from San Francisco. This is Dudley Manlove speaking. You are tuned for the stars on NBC.
That's the show for this week, but don't forget there are thousands more like it at relicradio.com. Horror, strange tales, science fiction, crime, all available for free. If you'd like to donate to Relic Radio and help keep it all free, you can do that through the website as well. Visit donate.relicradio.com to find out more and to see the special downloadable sets that are available. My thanks to those who have donated, and thanks for listening today. Talk to you again next week.